Hey, Derek, how's it going today?
Greetings and good afternoon, Eric. It's going good. You know, it's snowy here in Wisconsin. You're just down the road from me, so I know it's snowy there too.
I have whiteout conditions here, actually, as you can see out my window.
Indeed. Well, welcome everybody to another edition, actually episode 56 by my account of Running Into the Fog. We like to gather here. It's almost a regular weekly cadence on Wednesdays at noon, Central Time, to bring in guests who, in one way or another, whether it's personal life, professional life, or both, they encounter a certain degree of fog in their lives. And John, you know, we're going to lean into that theme here today with you. John Arms, welcome to the podcast. We're excited to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's snowing here as well. So we have, all three of us have that in common.
And you're in Minneapolis.
I'm in the Twin Cities. I'm in South Minneapolis. Yeah. So I think we're just about done with the snow, and I'm just about ready for some like Arizona weather. I don't need snow. don't have to have it.
Yeah, right on. So let's get this party started. You know, the first 30 minutes or so, fairly open, then we'll kind of close to the outsiders that aren't registered on the platform, you know, here in the second half of our hour. But John, when you think about, you know, having started a fractional leadership university, if you will, now 4 years or so ago, mm-hmm. Imagine that brought along a certain amount of anxiety, you know, you kind of going out there adventuring on your own, finding great partners who you could adventure with, such as our mutual dear friend, Jason Voyevich, who, Jason, yeah. I really do hope you come on the second half and serve as one of our interlocutors with our mutual friend, John, here. The question I'd like to lead with today is actually inspired by Jason. And, you know, it's one that I think a lot of individuals and organizations are trying to struggle and cope with right now. And that is, in the wake of this trend of quiet quitting and the great resignation, or even the great reorganization, and we see that happening more and more, you know, some of that vernacular is interchangeable to a certain extent. But why is it that corporate workers are so burned out? And is that a new thing? Is that a COVID thing? Or is that a phenomenon that's been brewing for a while? And where does your venture, co-venture through Voyager University really come in, you know, sure. as it relates to that?
Yeah. Well, that's a really full, rich question. And I can't wait to attack it. You know, we provide the relief for all of that, but, you know, you said something, it has been brewing for a long time. It's often thought that COVID is the trigger for that, but that's not actually so. The trigger for it has been sort of marinating in the US economy since about the end of World War II, when we got into the type of corporate work environment that started in a way and continued in a way that led to just massive burnout. So I'll unpack a couple things of that. When my dad started in business in the 50s, it was a 40-hour week. And it was, you know, the CEO made about four or five times the average worker. There was no expectations greater than that. And on either the, you know, talent or employee side or on the ownership side, that was just the way it was. But as it, then that was sort of the low side of its arc up. But as it continued, because the insatiable desire for more profit, it was pretty healthy for about 20 years into the 70s. But after that, it got nuts. Like, yep, we want more profit, which means we want more of our people's time so we can charge more and make more. So now, of course, it all led to, we're going to reach into your weekends. Here, have a computer and a phone. You can work before you go to work and you can work after you go to work. Here, you know, you're hop on an airplane. Let's get Wi-Fi on those airplanes so you can work there. You're going on vacation. Well, make sure you bring that laptop. Work followed us everywhere, and it was technology made it very easy to do so. But you can't do that if you're a dairy farmer. You know, you can't, just, you know, work in the agricultural sort of society we lived at. It was sort of, there was clear boundaries, but in a technology society, the boundaries are not very clear. And that was taken advantage of. And to the great, some would say, economic progress of the American work engine, but somebody was on the demise side of that. And that was the worker, because the weekends went away and the time with the kids went away and the family time went away and the vacation got eaten too. And so when you sort of step back and notice that, okay, COVID paused all that, and two things happened. One, psychologically, we very quickly came to grips with our own mortality. We might not wake up tomorrow. This COVID thing might end it all for me. So I'm really going to focus on what's really important to me. And then two, which is more of the business side of it, is it looks like I didn't need to be in the office anyway. I didn't need to work weekends anyway. I didn't have to work on the airplane. I'm doing just fine with an $800 Dell and a phone. In fact, I'm getting some of what I've always wanted back. So I think COVID gave us the pause that provided us to look at the lens on that and say, can I swear on the show? If I can. It's BS. It's, you know, this is all BS. You know, it's like I got totally taken advantage of. Maybe I allowed it to happen. Maybe it was intentional. Maybe it wasn't. But the net outcome is the net outcome. And people are revolting against that. And that's why people quiet quit. That's why people quiet resignate. I think what really, really put sort of the icing on the cake on that in this last 2 years, when we realized just how much largesse happened because of workers' effort. You know, we're talking CEO compensations we can't even comprehend. We're talking, you know, stock shares. I mean, 99% of the world just can't get their arms around the numbers that are around that. And what people are saying is somebody won, and it's about 10 people, and somebody lost, and that's about 350 million people. And so that's created a new norm. There, that's a long answer to a short question, but those are some of the dynamics at play. How it relates to the other part of your question, how it relates to Voyager is, you know, we're the relief mechanism for that. Is, you know what? Screw it. My destiny was not determined by myself. I went to work for a company. My destiny was determined by the success or failure of that company. All of a sudden, that didn't work out so well. Layoff, cut, you're not getting, you know, the top is thin. Only five or six people are going to get equity. Everybody else is just, you're gone, right? And then the firings happened, and we really, really felt that. So this hunger for, I need me some of that self-determination. I need something where I don't have to live that way or act that way or even think that way. And it's not an anti-corporate thing. It's more of a embracing of our self-determination. On the front, it looks like I'm quiet quitting. I'm leaving something. I'm great resignating. It's all a departure, right? I'm leaving. But the question is, where are we going to? It's like, all right, screw it. I've had enough. Well, you gotta choose a path forward after you've had enough. And so that's where this whole pursuit of fractional, which is that's the space we're in, and independence, which, you know, is growing like crazy. That's where why we're going this way. And it's a great moment in American economy. It really is. So I'm going to stop there because that's a lot of words.
Well, I was just going to jump in and say, you know, the decentralization of power is something that really started during the great financial crisis. And, you know, 15 years ago, the blow up, I've been researching lately what happened with BNP Paribas on, I think it was August 9th of 2007. That is the technical date when globalization started reversing. Now we see it becomes visible now when, you know, we have no PPE for our medical folks and half our, you know, pharmaceuticals are made in China. And we're wondering, boy, do we need to reshore all this stuff? Hey, by the way, where's our semiconductors coming from? Aren't they all made? Hey, they're all made offshore. And so we get to this point of recognition all of a sudden as a culture and a society that we've concentrated this power in the hands of a bunch of really narcissistic, not all of them, I'm sure, but a good portion, a higher proportion, I think, than the general American populace, narcissistic, selfish, some downright evil. And they don't really care about us. They don't think of us as human beings. They think of us as cogs in a wheel. And what I see happening with fractional is a recovery, a seizure of the economics behind productivity itself. And I'll use Jason Voyevich, since Derek took his name in vain once already today. I'll do it a second time. And I think you did as well, John. So he better come on as an interlocutor in the second half just to defend himself.
That's right.
But I'll cite Jason Voyevich as someone that I was mentioning we have a long professional collaborative relationship with. But frankly, we couldn't afford Jason Voyevich as our chief marketing officer. He's too talented. So we can afford 20% of Jason Voyevich as our chief marketing officer, and he can do all the chief marketing officer things that Aurora WDC needs to have done, and then some. And we don't have to actually pay him what he's worth, to be quite candid. Now, that's not to say that in aggregate, he doesn't earn a fantastic, you know, financial reward. I'm sure he does. But the change of the economic structure of how productivity itself gets done, I think, is what's most exciting to me. And what you've been doing with Jason these last 4 or 5 years is now you're propagating that. You're challenging people who are unhappy in these sort of tedious, drudgerous, almost sort of toxic corporate roles they found themselves stuck in to break free and to give them, well, we can start cussing in the second half for unspeakable, but you know exactly what I mean.
You said a really good word there, and as there's a re-seizing or a seizure of self-destiny. And, you know, this week, these last 2 weeks particularly, some things have come to light, and it just happened these last couple of days with Elon Musk. And now what's going to happen with Bezos? They're going to do some layoffs. They already have. And you have to ask yourself, do I want my fate tied to not only that person, that type of person, that thinking? And if I have to, I guess it's so. But what if I don't have to? What if I don't have to tie my fate to, the, as you described, sort of that narcissistic, we've got all the money, we'll make all the decisions. And honestly, money doesn't make you a good decision maker. Twitter has proven that. You know? And the same thing, I mean, it's proven again and again. And what people are saying is, no, I don't want my fate tied to that. Not just Elon, right? That mentality. I have more to contribute to this world. I want to help more. And I can't help Twitter. I can't help self, you know, absorbed companies continue to do more self-absorbing. But I can help companies that add some value to the world, that can do things, that can grow, that can innovate, that can just do these amazing things. And quite honestly, there's about 30 million of them in the United States. It's the middle of the market. All the places where the big companies are now, at one point, were some idea in a garage. That's sort of the American fable, right? And what Fractional has done, and a re-seizure of my time, it said, hey, you've got a great idea, and you've got great talent. Let's put them together and grow and advance and not have what we've had for 75 years. You come in here and I'll overstretch our budget and pay you $300,000 a year. And all you're going to do is sit in our office. And, you know, quite honestly, you don't need to work that much because you put in your time. Your wisdom is worth way more than your time right now. So yeah, all these dynamics are coming into play in this re-seizure of my time and my own self-determination. And then there's this embracing of it from the hiring side. It's amazing. You know, you're a company that's like millions of others, and that is, not only do I not want this person as my CTO, CIO, full-time around here all the time, not only for economic reasons, we just don't need it. You know, COVID shows, they're a pretty productive person with all that experience and a laptop and a little bit of time. And so the whole thing is shaken up, and it's to the betterment of our society. And I'll tell you why. This is my prediction, the amount of innovation that has been stagnant inside of corporate halls has been unleashed because of Fractional. And that means the people who can be Fractional, it's like a dog let off leash at a dog park. Like, open the gate and out they go. They're excited and they're happy and it's awesome and there's no leash and it's fantastic. And you could never do that at a Fortune 5. You're stuck, by and large. At the other side of it is those catching and utilizing that talent. Like, oh, we just can't afford this person, or we just can't get to it, our corporate structure. How about some outside energy that is super high energy, super wise, super talented, knows stuff that we don't know, that we can bolt onto this organization and we can all grow. We can go up and to the right. So I think that is going to create just a ridiculous amount of innovation, which will mean productivity here on our shores over the next 10 or 15 years. I don't even think we're only at the very, very tip, but Jason, I still, you know, the idea of fractional, if you were to look up fractional a year ago, it would have had to do, Google would have said, fractional is how you measure fluid in a distribution model and some sort of tool in an airplane thing. It's only now like a term in the vernacular. When Jason and I started, this was like gig work. You know, wait, it's consulting. Well, it's not really consulting. Well, it's freelance. Well, it's actually not really freelance. There were just, now we're just getting to like a vernacular where we can talk about this dynamic. So change takes time, but boy, is it exciting. And boy, is it just, the people, there are so many people dying to rewrite their next chapter, but they know replacing their current job with a similar one in the same sort of, what would you call it? So the same sort of work culture isn't going to write that next chapter. It's just going to repeat the last chapter and nobody wants that anymore. So yeah, we're in for some good times with all of this fractional stuff.
John, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Maybe it's inspired by the idea that could or should there be a fractional chief intelligence officer in an organization someday? So set that aside for a second.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I'll invite you to respond to that
notion
here in a minute. But aside from that, what roles inside of a company, small, medium, or large, and I know there's going to be a size bias on your answer most likely.
Mm-hmm.
What roles are you bewildered as to why they haven't embraced fractional to date? Are there any? And where do you see those opportunities to kind of move the needle? Again, size bias included. Sure. What's out there, you know, in terms of opportunities for fractional roles in the future that may not have been embraced as of November the 16th of 2022?
Sure. You know, the one of the first ones, it does stump me a little bit that there aren't fractional chief executive officers. There's fractional chief marketing officers, chief technology officers, chief operating officers, chief financial officers. Financial was probably the first one in, followed by marketing. Like of that, that's a good model that fits, right? And so, and now it's sort of like kind of, you can think about just almost fractional anything and it fits. But the two I think you're talking about, you know, chief information officer and chief executive officer. It's so funny when you think about it. When a company is struggling, like we need a new CEO, we need some outside thinking. Can't have somebody from the inside. Happens all the time, right? All the time. And there's a reason for that. We need somebody who isn't encumbered by our own internal biases and thinking. So it's written about in Forbes probably every week. This has happening over here at whether it's Nike or wherever, you know. Well, that's a fractional person. They're not going to come in and say, guess what? You know, Elon didn't come to Twitter, and he has not done a good job, but they don't come in with their outside thinking and chain themselves to their desk and just grind their way through. The value is their outside viewpoint is what's going to bring that forward. It's going to move the company forward. Otherwise, he wouldn't be looking to replace it. So the very nature of fractional is you're bringing people with outside perspective. And guess what's killed companies for decades? Inside perspective. We can't get outside of our own box. Companies, they will tell you this all day and every day. We just can't get any fresh thinking here. We're too big. We're too siloed. All sorts of things. So you get some outside viewpoint. That's what makes fractional so good and useful and attractive to companies. And as a fractional professional, it's fantastic, right? Because your company's like, hey, I don't need you to report your time. I need you to point to the three different bear traps that are ahead of us that we can't see. Whether it's ops or IT or finance. Second part of what you talk about, absolutely a chief information officer. When you think about the kind of information that is going to move a business or an idea forward, it's either going to be in distilling what you have or something from the outside. Now, are you going to be very good at doing that at a company? It's probably spread across a couple people trying to do it. But when you think about information and data and its role in advancing a cause, a mission, or a business, and having someone who is fresh and energetic and skilled and has a viewpoint on that, there should be chief information officers. Absolutely, there should be chief information officers. Part of the struggle is still some companies are looking at it as like, how do they step and repeat the way we do things? And that doesn't fit. And that's not the reason you hire somebody who's fractional. How do we break out of our own skin so we can grow? Like a snake or a crab? I think both those things do that, now that I think about it. Crabs, snakes, lobsters, you got to break out of that skin, right? Otherwise you get stuck. So yeah, I think there should be chief information officers. And it makes me think about it. We got 270, 80, I don't know, some big number of wonderful fractionals in our community. And I'm just wondering how many are come from, you know, we got CTOs. We could probably have a few that come from a CIO place. Time to talk to them a little bit more.
So that was actually going to be my next question, is what percentage are fractional CMOs versus all others? Since you and Jason are both really fractional CMOs, is
we
that
come
sort
from
of-
marketing. Yeah. Yeah. We come from marketing, good, bad, or otherwise. We started it actually just for marketers, and then we started to get people subscribing to the community and saying, but you're an ops person or you're from finance. What are you doing here? And people are saying, there was no other path for me to go fractional or independent. It just didn't exist. Why is that? Well, I worked for 30 years over here and they didn't have any interest in training me to be independent. It was quite the opposite. And so we're like, oh, we better listen to that. That's one thing I think Jason and I are good at, is we just listen to our people and say, what's happening? And we realized this is bigger than marketing. This is for everybody who's got all this pent up energy and looking for their next chapter. It's not just for marketing people. So we adjusted and opened the umbrella and opened up the tent to take on anybody who would fit in a fractional place and support their journey there.
Nice.
What is the percentage? Okay, good question. We're probably spread pretty evenly now, I would say. Early on, it was marketing and finance. Shortly after, we got a ton of people from ops that come from operations. The whole EOS thing has moved a lot of people into ops. We got a ton of people who are like chief sales officers. Very, very, very good fractional model as well. More lately, we've seen more chief HR, fractional HR people. That's been emerging quite a bit in the last few months or last year. Technology has always been pretty stable, but a lower percentage. We got plenty, but it moves at a kind of a more predictable pace. So for whatever reason, but yeah, I think we represent, like when you think of all the chairs in an organization, all the seats, all the butts and seats that would be in a leadership part, I think we represent all of them now, unless a new one gets created.
Derek, do you have a question? Because I have a follow-up to that and an announcement to make at this point in the show.
Yeah, are you seeing this anonymous attendee question in the Q&A?
I am not.
We should get to that at some point, but why don't you go first?
Ah, here it is. All right. So I want to make a quick little marketing announcement, actually, speaking of marketing. And that is, you see two QR codes on your screen in front of you, everybody. The first one you see has no logo in the middle of it. That's called a POAP, a Proof of Attendance Protocol token. It's a Web3 token that allows you to gain access to privileges later that we may make available to those of you who took the time to attend these things. So scan that, claim it. The POAP mobile app is the way I do it. There we go. I don't know if it'll, there you go. I claimed my unthinkable POAP here a couple of minutes ago, but while Derek and John were talking. And then the second QR code you see on your screen, scan that if you want to stay here past the bottom of the hour, because in about 5 minutes, we're going to say goodbye to the folks who are streaming on social, and you're going to have to join the actual webinar bridge. If you want to do that, you got to scan the logoed QR code. It'll take you to a page. You can register, and then you can hop on the real bridge, because the fun starts about 5 minutes from now when we open up to our interlocutors from the audience who are going to jump in. We're going to turn John over to them, and man, it's a free-for-all.
Any bar of the door.
Yeah, exactly. So quick marketing announcement. My big question was, and then Derek, you take this from John on his response. How many different, is it clients that you call them? How many, what's the average number of outside fractional clients does a CXO serve?
It's about, I think four is probably the average. You know, it's about four. And you want some math around that? So you can take on about four clients because you don't, you really don't sell yourself by day part. So like, well, four clients equals 4 days. Because, you know, client needs don't just live inside of one day. And your ability to solve them does not live inside of 1 hour. Sometimes it lives inside of 1 minute. So four clients is a good mix. The economics are good. That's a couple hundred thousand dollars a year in revenue. So that's great. The opportunities are good because with that becomes, you know, oftentimes comes equity and board roles and all that kind of fun stuff. So four is a good number. Three is healthy. Three, if you have three or even two, hey, you got more time for family, more time for fishing, more time to build a deck off the house, you know, and still making really good money. And you're actually very satisfied. Satisfaction is the big thing. It's like, this is on me. I am. This is my own self-determination here. This is on me and I love it. And it's you know, six or more. The finance people tend to take on more. They're very good at it. Some of them tell me, you know, some of the work they do is somewhat programmatic. So that allows them to take on more. You know, four is healthy for everybody, healthy for the client. And yes, they're referred to as clients and healthy for the practitioner, for the fractional pro. I had six at one time, a little nutty.
How do you, you know, when you just finished, John, talking about the 1970s and 80s being the advent of this, hey, take your cell phone on vacation, your laptop on vacation, you know, you can work before work and after work, that type of stuff. Right. You know, in that model, how does one balance, if you're a fractional leader like that, how do you balance, you know, having so many clients where it's not, to your point, a day part?
Right.
And you're, is it just that the energy of serving different types of businesses and different colleagues and different types of leaders in these businesses allows you to kind of break free from the doldrums of serving just one inside a business? Does that have a lot to do with it, I would imagine?
It has more. The successful application there is cadence. You know, when you have clients, you very quickly recommend, let's get on a cadence. Let's meet every week for an hour. Let's meet every week for 2 hours. There's some cadence, right? Because the real thinking happens between the cadences. And so clients love that. They're like, oh, thank God. We've been trying to have a meeting about information for months. Now it's every week and it's at this time and I can have some relief. Same thing for practitioners. I am going to be thinking in a cadence way so that what I do in the in-between sort of escalates to these moments. Maybe it's every week. Maybe it's every 2 weeks. And generally, there's kind of a dashboard that comes with that. So that right there is the success factor to that question you had, is cadence is how you do it. So again, it's not a day part, right? You're sort of working up to those moments in your week. If you have four clients, you probably have four meetings in a week. That, or you're meeting with leadership for a half hour, maybe an hour, something like that. And going through the stuff, solving the issues.
Got it.
Cadence is king.
As we pivot here from first half to second half of our time today, I'm going to read this question. It's kind of a statement and a question from an anonymous attendee in the Q&A to you, John. Some would argue this new breakneck speed of work increased by virtual meetings and always on access to the tools we need, no longer left at the office when we go home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hurts more than it helps. How would you describe the responsibility of leaders to measure and prevent the negative impacts of innovation?
In the fractional world, you are the leader. So you're in charge of putting up the walls and the parameters around that. You're your own boss and you create your own rules and you create a cadence and you sort of set that. So it's far easier when you're a fractional to do that. Because let's say you go, I have four clients and I'm going to do one meeting a week with each. That's 4 days. Nobody's going to touch my Fridays and the laptop gets closed at noon because that's when I want to go work out or some such thing. So it's very easy for you to do that. And quite honestly, fractional clients, they'll appreciate that. Because quite honestly, if they brought you in as a fractional, they don't have a cadence on what you do. That's why you're there. You know, they don't have a cadence or a structure or even people to do the information stuff or the marketing stuff or the sales stuff or the op stuff. Or if they do, it's chaos. So you sort of guide that for your clients. Now, on the corporate side, I think the question was, how do you sort of encourage leaders to have some respect for that? To that, I say, good luck. I don't see it happening. I see a lot of talk about it and a lot of here's this and here's that and we should. It's just not built into the economics. As long as the economics are built on profit, is returning shares back to shareholders, it's going to squeeze the people as much as they possibly can. And you can give lip service to how you're going to HR this thing like crazy. Now, there's some checkpoint that's happening on a macro scale, and that is people like, listen, if you don't do it my way, I'm out. I'm down the street. They're hiring. The trouble is the people are hiring. It might be 1 or 2% better. But as long as the core is kind of a repeat of what we had, I wouldn't expect a whole lot of change. Because you just don't have the voice, right? You can't go to the CEO and go, you're doing your business completely wrong. We all need, you know, all sorts of different things. And look what the struggle has been for them. Pizza parties, you know, demanding you come back. They can't get it right. They can't get it right. And it's going to, and I don't think they will, quite honestly. I think the people are going to be the ones to guide it. When you're fractional, you're the one who guides it, and they appreciate it. And it's going to happen in the middle market. It's a brutal, honest truth, I think, and I may be wrong.
Words of wisdom. On that note, we're going to say das vidanya, Rusiskaya Siat Robotov. All you Russian botnets can go back to Kherson and take it up with Vladimir. We're going to say goodbye to everybody on social. If you haven't converted by now, you're not going to. So we'll see you next Wednesday. And the live stream is gone.